Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Next up, Call of the Soul with Ray Falkenberry. Let's bring him on to reintroduce himself, his show, and what's up for today.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Call of the Soul. It's great to be visiting with you again. It's been an interesting couple of weeks for me, and I'll be able to share a little bit of the details since I last chatted with you. As it relates to something kind of interesting, as a lot of you know, the Call of the Soul is designed to help people discover the call of their soul. Well, what does that mean? It's tied to three different areas that we've been talking about in general ways. One is physical health, one is mental health, one is education, some is business. And we just kind of talk about life as it unfolds in different ways. And today, I've had the privilege of having some amazing people on. And today, I have an extra special person on, somebody who's near and dear to my heart. And I can honestly say I love this person. I love everybody, but I love this person especially because it's my son. And so I wanted to have my son on because he is a gifted physical trainer. He has been training for a few years in doing incredible work, and he's a certified personal trainer. He's going to be certified strength and fitness coach. That's by the time you listen to this, he will have passed his exam and be incredible in that arena as
well. We can help.
And I wanted to be able to tap his brain because it's kind of like a full circle thing that we'll get into that I think is kind of an interesting synchronicity. So my son is Wes Falkenberry, and I want to welcome him to the show. Thanks for jumping on and being on the show with us today, Wes.
Yeah, absolutely, Dad. Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
It's exciting. Let's first start out by chatting a little bit about physical health. I know everybody, Wes, has heard their whole life about physical fitness. People did it in school, and you know, then we start working and getting into life, and maybe we get away from that. And I guess my first thing is, I'd maybe ask, what prompted you to want to get into physical training? Because you know, your background in some ways has been physical, but in other ways not. So what got you into wanting to be not only a certified top-of-the-line personal trainer, but a strength and conditioning coach?
Yeah, really, really great question. Been going to the gym for a long time. You were actually, as you know, my first introduction to a traditional gym setting, weightlifting, resistance training. I remember you trying for a number of years over breaks and free passes and things to 24-hour fitness was our first gym, getting me involved. And I would do a few weeks when I had the break in school. You were kind enough to take me and I'd fall off. And it wasn't really till I was around 19, 20 that another one of my friends, Will, who is born the same month, he's a tall guy too, similar build. I ran into him at our college and he offered to bring me along. I wasn't very active. I'd done martial arts, of course, with you for a number of years. And it was just really good timing. I was at a point in my life where I was so fed up. I didn't like the way I looked physically, as many people get into the gym, if they're being honest, is a point of trying to improve their body and the way they feel about it. And I took him up on the offer, and it was good because I got to see, I'd always known you were strong. You were always a regular gym goer. You've been a gym rat for decades now. So it was removed, but someone, I think finally seeing it, I had the time, I had the means to get to the gym. I had someone to show me, someone that was my age, and seeing what he was capable of in his physique, it finally clicked for me. And I've been lifting ever since. So that was 1920. So it's been 10 years or so. But that was for as a hobby. It wasn't until post COVID did I consider it as a career. By the time I was 27, 28, I'd been lifting for 8 years or so. And, when my startup worked, my previous background was in SaaS sales. When that was shuttered due to COVID, I took the moment to reevaluate and thought about, hey, I didn't feel like I was helping people in a SaaS sales format, but I realized where a product I could really stand behind was physical fitness. And I decided to switch a few years ago and never look back. And it's been a really good couple of years. I've enjoyed it a lot.
You know what's interesting, Wes, as I think back on not only my evolution, but your evolution, you know, you did train with us martial art as a little kid. You grew up in the martial arts school. Actually, as a baby, you were in the playpen. And so you grew up playing at the school and then training for, gosh, 10, 15 years or longer. And it's interesting in that I found that a lot of people have this, and in physical fitness, they have this body image issue that, you know, we talk about it. And I found it interesting is, I just came through, Wes had suggested that I come back through because I had met his mother, my wife, 45 years ago in a health club where I was a personal trainer and she was a receptionist. But the training way back in the day, and this was a Jack LaLanne. Most people may not know who Jack LaLanne was.
Yeah, both these terms, health club, the name of the club. Well,
yeah, so he's an old dinosaur dude. But the training was amazing in that I learned to put people on programs in about 30 minutes versus the science-backed program that you trained in and then gone on beyond certification of personal training, but in the strength and conditioning, I was blown away just finishing a couple of weeks ago the NASM Certified Personal Training course, how much it has evolved. And I guess the first thing I want to jump into is the body image thing. Can you talk about, Wes, not only your, because for people who don't know, Wes is 6'3 and a half, 220 pounds, lean, good looking, way better looking than I am, and powerful, strong, bench press a house, squat a house, deadlift a house. And so when I hear people who have these issues with how they look, I'm always kind of curious as to what is that process, that psychological, physical process of dealing with the body image. How did that unfold for you?
Yeah, very generous on the list. Thank you. I don't know if I'm considered that strong, but I've got fun over the years. I've had fun over the years with it. So I could speak to a little bit of how I see the industry and most people getting in, but also my journey I think it reflects many people, especially young men's wanting to get into the gym. I would consider myself lucky in some ways where I wasn't super big into the social media when I started lifting. Facebook was around. Instagram really wasn't so much a thing. I wasn't into this ecosystem of seeing other people's bodies. And it's very different for young people lifting now. It's been a double-edged sword, really, for the most part, because I'm seeing younger and younger people in the gym, especially young women who are getting very strong, very aesthetic. And I think we have social media to thank for that. But at the same time, I think there's probably an all-time high when it comes to levels of body dysmorphia, body image issues. A lot of young people are struggling with that. And that was my case as well. I was very unhappy in my body. I did not start working out from a place of self-love or care. It was of hatred, of wanting to fix something that was wrong with me. I couldn't stand it. I was unusual in the sense that once I started, I never stopped. Unfortunately, most people, 80 to 90% of people who start a fitness journey or diet will probably fail, if I remember that statistic correctly, and then relapse and then try again next year. The whole industry bases it off of, hey, New Year's resolution, we're ready for that gym spike. See you by May, you're going to be gone. My journey will mimic in that sense, where it was very much one of not feeling happy with myself and needing to do something about it. Did I answer your question a little bit, Paul?
Yeah. No, that makes great sense. And one of the things that I tell my students, college students, and you've heard this, but, you know, and I think our audience can truly benefit from this, is so often in our world, We're always trying to measure up. We're trying to be more successful. We're trying to be, you know, we're going to hit that new financial goal. We're going to hit that physical goal. We're going to take that great vacation. We're going to buy that great car. We're going to, it's always this next level kind of thing that I think can be a challenge. And one of the things that I have struggled with early in my life and maybe longer than I would have wanted to, is this issue we're talking about. And one of the things I want people to realize is you are enough. I'm not saying there's not improvement room, meaning that we can't get healthier. We can't eat, you know, I'm not saying we can't eat better. We can always eat better. There's always room to grow. There's always room to improve. But the message I want people to realize is you are inherently enough. You know, people are bright enough, kind enough, compassionate enough, charismatic enough, empathetic enough. So the challenge is, what is it going to take to accept that? And one of the things that I think is interesting is that when we start to take care of ourselves and make better decisions, when we eat a little bit better, when we make it a habit to get out and walk, or we go to the gym and we see something different, was your transition from that body dysmorphia, that image issue, that time when you didn't like yourself and you didn't feel enough, what were some key things that helped get you over that hump to where you began to feel better about yourself? What were some
barriers? Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. It wasn't like, oh, I have some, which I don't at the moment. I'm good with myself. It's not like you check a box and everything gets better. There's lots of funny jokes online where people look in the mirror, they're unhappy. 4 years later, and they're jacked, they look in the mirror, guess what? They're still kind of unhappy. It doesn't fix every issue in your life. Fitness did help me, but that I've come a long way with that. And there wasn't a singular moment where like, oh, I'm good with myself, because I'm being fully honest with you. I still battle, and many fitness professionals still battle with their own insecurity. Many times these big bodybuilders we're seeing who are just create these massive godlike physiques, it is considered a big shell of a broken, insecure person underneath, which is unfortunately sometimes a sad truth, where you will build up a body that other people will see as amazing. You may not always see as amazing, but it doesn't necessarily fix issues that you may have going on. But when I can relate this to when I see clients, but I tell many of them start for the same reason I do. They're unhappy. It's not from a place of self-love. They're punishing themselves. They need to fix something. That eventually, given enough time, exercise, and I tell my clients that I hope this is where they get to, is an expression of self-love. It is one of taking care of yourself. And I wish I had a better answer for you on when it becomes a place of total self-acceptance. I think there is something to be gained that when you are actively working to improve yourself, it's a lot easier to accept where you're at, because you're actually doing something. A lot of people are really unhappy because they're not doing anything. They're sitting on their couch, they're on their phone, they're seeing these beautiful bodies, these freaks online that are genetic marbles with the perfect camera angle, and they get really down on themselves. And is that ever always a possibility for all of us? No, I don't have the genetics to be a bodybuilder. As much as I love bodybuilding, hypertrophy training, I will never be a stage bodybuilder, but that's okay, because I feel like I'm working my own process. I'm improving day by day, and I'm doing something about it. And I took a lot of comfort in that as an individual.
Well, that, I think you just hit on a huge point for people wherever they are. And this is huge. I don't want people to miss this. The victory isn't getting on stage. The victory isn't getting jacked up and having ripped body or being this female that could go on as a fitness model. I mean, there's not that end result goal where you need to be that. And you touched on a few things that we could dive into on bodybuilding, insecurity, and body dysmorphia, and all of the stuff that can go into that. But what I think that I've always tried to do, and again, I've battled with this myself in some ways, but the victory has always been the process itself. Can I go to the gym, or can I go and honor my body in a way that says, I do care about myself, and me, myself, being a faith-based person, you know, people have heard this, you know, this is your temple. This is a temple that you've been given in this life, you know, honor this temple, love this temple. And I know it's not always perfect because we can always look in the mirror and go, gosh, I'd like a little bit of more act showing. I'd like a little bit of
course. Literally every human being on the planet does that. Even those Instagram models that you see and you think they look incredible, they're like, I'm small. This person looks better. This isn't as defined as I want. I don't know if that ever goes away. If you solve that, kudos to you. You have evolved to the next level. If you can look and so I think some people are. I'm not one of those people, but there is the fun and make it fun of the process of self-improvement. It's you're right. It's not about the destination. For many, there is no destination. It truly is the continuing process. And I'm successful with my clients if they continue the journey long after they work with me.
Yes.
It's not about arrival. It's about continue to find that process. And that can change for you. When you're a 20-year-old guy, you want a six-pack? Sure. Great. But when you're 16, you're hopefully still active. Maybe it's just about chasing your grandkids around or being able to pick stuff off the ground or that grandmother I train wants to be able to garden and lift bags of soil. That's what it changes. And that's okay to change throughout your life too.
I totally agree with that. And I know the message that I really want people to get to is, you know, don't get caught up in what you don't have. Think about what you do have. And can we do something today? Can we do something today? You know, I talked a lot about in college and in the field of psychology, you know, we tend to drift into melancholy and depression. When we think back of the past and the things we didn't do, the things we didn't accomplish, the turns we didn't make versus going too much in the future and I'm stressing about, gosh, am I going to be able to retire? Am I going to find the right mate? Am I going to get a good job? I mean, all of that stuff is either future stress, past worry. Can I do it today? And I know for me, it has changed in that, you know, I haven't told my audience, Wes knows this, but I had surgery a couple days ago on my knee and I've lost track. It's either the sixth or the seventh time. And people would say that and say, well, why are you beating your body up? And I don't think of it as damaging my body. I think of it as I'm 64 years old and I continue to try and learn so that I can be as functionally healthy as I can. And I know that's a huge thing for a lot of people. And isn't it true, Wes, that a lot of people that you've been training over the last few years are older people who are looking for not just some excitement, but also functional health, happiness, and finding that joy and just being able to improve at something. And I can talk, and I'll maybe tell a story to the audience in a minute, but I'm curious as to, have you had clients that fit that kind of profile as well?
Absolutely. I'd say most of them. Well, if you compressed every average personal training client down to a single demographic, it would probably be a woman of 40 years old is the most average. It's not your young guys don't want to work with a trainer unless they're like specialty into bodybuilding. It's not cool to their friends that they have me following around. They want to see like they know what they're doing. They know better than me. That's great. Again, painting with broad brushstrokes here, right? Because I've had anything from 13-year-old clients to a 75-year-old grandmother who liked to power lift. It was amazing. But I would say, yeah, the majority of people just want to be able to, one, be pain-free and do the stuff that they want to do.
Yeah.
You and me are gymnasts. We like to deadlift as heavy as possible, squat, these kinds of things. We're into the numbers. We're into pushing ourselves. Most people don't care about that, Dad. They want to be able to do the things they want to do. They want to not hate their body. And they don't want to be in pain. And so I would say that's by far makes up, in my experience, more of the clientele.
You know what's interesting? You said something that I hadn't really thought much about. You know, you have I find it interesting. You're right in that, because I've been pretty much going to the gym since I started. When I met your mom, started working in the gym in 1980, and then spending some years working in the field and then getting out of it. I found that most of the guys, young guys, in fact, I can't even think of, gosh, I don't know if I can think of five guys in the last 45 years who had a personal trainer. They either had the ego that said they knew what to do, they wanted to do it themselves, but most of the people who had trainers were older, and I don't think their goals were, you know, towards the bodybuilding side. So I guess one of the things that is interesting to me is this thing you said, pain. You talked about pain, and I think that for me, even though I've been, you know, we call it a gym rat because I've been going to the gym for 45 years, whatever, it's been 45 years now going on, is this thing called functional fitness. And for me now, with this latest injury, I'm not interested as much into the numbers anymore. It was fun to deadlift and spend a couple years pushing that level, but I think I get injured enough that I'm looking for functional fitness because you said the word. I want to eliminate pain. And I know most people your age, pain comes kind of intermittently with a heavy workout or a trip or fall. But people my age that are 50, 60, 70, in that range, we're looking to eliminate pain. And as I move forward, I want to become fit in a way that allows me to move my joints freely. Would it be nice to be, you know, functionally strong? Yeah. Well, what does that mean? I mean, that's an arbitrary figure. For some people, functionally strong may be able to do one pull-up.
Right. And that's what I was going to ask you is functional fitness. People, you ask 10 different people what that means, you'll probably get, you know, 9 different answers. I'd be curious to hear what that means to you if you were one of my clients, because I hear that and I have an idea of it, but it might be different than your idea. And the other thing I want to tell your audience and what I tell my clients regularly is that exercise is a medicine, right? And your dosage has changed. Your dosage has changed. Like, is it fun to deadlift 350 plus pounds? Yeah, absolutely. But there's at that point where your risk-reward ratio is off. You've gotten a lot of the reward from it and you're just increasing your risk. And it depends on what you want to accomplish, right? You're not trying to compete for bodybuilding. You're not trying to be a power lifter at a certain age bracket. So it's like, again, is your workouts matching what your goals are for your work? What are you doing? What are you trying to accomplish? And the dosage is there's a spectrum of our doses. So if we're assuming that exercise is a medicine, we can underdose to not have an effective amount. And we can also overdose. Perhaps you overdosed because you had to have that knee surgery, right? And somewhere in between is the optimal dosage for Ray, right? And that can be a moving thing. We're always looking for that target. And so maybe you're finding that, hey, I need to have that right dosage. And maybe that is functional fitness. So back to that point, what do you see that as?
Yeah, you know, you said something interesting. And I hadn't really heard, strangely enough, I never really heard of the kind of the metaphor as exercise as a medicine. But it, ladies and gentlemen, we grow up hearing about it, and there is more and more research saying that, gosh, aside from, and there's research talking about this, improving the quality of your sleep, putting good food in your body, and moving it.
Doctors would be out of business. Like it would be such a, like if I could get people to get up and move for 30 minutes and have 30 grams of protein first thing in the morning, we wouldn't probably have a health crisis. Like if you bottled exercise, it would be the most potent medicine. It would be more powerful than any antidepressant, any anti-anxiety medication. It would be absurd. And where my generation has benefited and people on social media today over when you were training as a trainer is we have decades of research now furthering these points, finding new ones and backing it up. And it's impossible to deny at this point.
You know, what's so fascinating to me about that is I don't want that to be underscored, because sometimes I think when we're forced a prescription, it's like, you know, you need to eat this liver because it's good for you, or you need to do this for it's good for you. When people tell you that, when I was told that, it made me not want to eat liver. You know, it was like when you're forced having to do it. But when you see and when you know and when the science tells you that essentially if you're eating decently and you're getting just decent amount of rest, if you can work your body, I cannot underscore the value of exercise. And I know people hear this a lot, but I guess my question that I would want people to go, because when you have a habit, it's easy. The hard thing is to create a habit when you don't have a habit. So my wife tells me, when I don't go to the gym, I get grumpy. And she'll sometimes say, you know what, go to the gym, go work out, because you need to do that. You need to do that, whether or not it's for my physical, mental, emotional, spiritual health. So the benefit of this is so off the charts. What would you suggest for people who maybe have been, you know, maybe they were active one time in their life, but they're professional, or maybe they're older, they're getting close to being retired, and their joints hurt, you know, they don't have the energy. You know, what would you suggest to get people into this idea that physical activity and medicine will help them live a happier, healthier life as they age?
Sure. And I think it'd be a good point to kind of define when we're talking about exercises and those benefits, because different forms of exercise will give you different benefits. Of course, there's crossovers, right? I'm a proponent as a personal trainer for what we call the wide umbrella of resistance training. And that can mean a lot of different things. The point is you're moving your body against some force, whether it's gravity, a band, a cable machine, a heavy barbell, and the benefits that go with that. I will, again, by next week, hopefully a strength conditioning coach would have that conditioning aspect, which may include some more cardiovascular, different energy pathway benefits. But I spend most of my time working within resistance training, and I know your training history is primarily resistance training as well. And so the recommendation for folks, and I'll probably will mention this several times on the conversation, is consistency, is sustainability. Good trainers will get you results in the short term while you're working together. That's not good enough for me as a trainer. I'm striving to create and coach the habits that they will carry that torch long after we stop working together. That is because short-term change is great. If you can't maintain it, it was a waste. Yeah, to be frank, like maybe you got some benefit, but we failed. I failed you. If you can't keep it up for 5 years, right? And so I'm always going on clients about how can we make the changes sustainable and realistic for you? Because where many people run into trouble, and especially with younger guys, is like, oh, I'm going to hit the gym 5 times a week, crush myself, 16 working sets of chest, I'm going to get huge back. That can't work in the long term. Eventually that will fail you. So the question is, what is a sustainable practice for you? And maybe that is a one time a week we're doing a class and we're walking on off days. That's infinitely better than sitting on a couch. Maybe that is several days with a trainer working an optimized resistance training program. People get stuck in analysis paralysis. We see all these videos on Instagram with like, what's the best way? This is the problem with the fitness industry. Everyone's always tribalism in terms of what they're fighting for. Barbells are the way, kettlebells are the way, keto, veganism, whatever. The truth is there's a huge amount of gray, and you're going to get benefit going any of those paths. We're all trying to say the same thing.
You know, it's interesting, man, because you said a phrase that I think a lot of us can identify with, especially people who have spent their lifetime making their living in their head, and that's analysis paralysis. We investigate, and the next thing you know, we're still not acting. And so to get off our couch and just start, I find that one of the things that is hardest for anybody is to create a habit, but you said something else is to make it fun. I don't know why it was sustainable for me, and I know that's the goal for people, because short-term goals are great, but if it can't become an incorporated habit, then you may do great work for 6 months, a year, and then a year later you're back where you were. So if
you even progressed at all, right? Yeah. And a big part of my job, and I think what I've seen from working with many talented trainers, is the huge difference is the trainer provides a good workout. The coach, it's like I'm working with the hardware as a trainer. I'm seeing your body move, physicality of it, right? But a coach, you know, where I think that next level comes from is working with the software, right? And creating realistic goals and habits. We call them SMART habits or SMART goals. You want specific and measurable and achievable. And you may have heard this stuff from psychology. That stuff really works. And when you put that pen to paper and you help clients find those things, especially, and then we could talk about the concept of motivational interviewing, when it comes from them, I'm not going to tell them what to do. I want to hear from you. What do you enjoy? What do you think is realistic for you? Great. Okay. How often can we do that? When can we do that? Making that really clear, that process, and they have a much higher chance of success when done correctly. So one of those attributes is, yeah, what do you enjoy doing? Because if I tell you, you need to go do barbell training 5 days a week, you're like, see you, Wes, it's never going to work. Fun, enjoyable is always better over optimal for long-term results.
Yeah. So I hope people got that, because there's so many old sayings, some movement is better than no movement. And one of the things, even though we can get used to habits, one of the things I'm looking forward to in this recovery from this latest knee thing is I do think I'm kind of done squatting with weights and heavier weights. And you know, I think that for me, can I have some fun, develop some semi-strong legs for what I want, doing body weight exercises, wall squats, little lunges. I'm a gym guy, so I don't mind doing that. But playing, you know, we play pickleball and get some cardio in that way, because I'm not one to want to run miles anymore. knees don't let me do that. But to find ways, whether it would be for some people to swim, other people to walk, playing pickleball, tennis, you know, doing something that can stimulate some kind of movement. I guess one of the questions I would ask you is, what is, if there's one obstacle you think that prevents people from moving more, what do you think that is? What's the obstacle, or what's the excuse people use that they don't participate in an exercise program?
Sure. That's one of the questions I ask every client in an assessment. And I'd say the top two answers are, one, usually time, which I'll be frank with you guys, is usually completely false. And then two, not knowing what to do. They step into a gym, which is, this is totally valid, and it's intimidating. There's big, heavy weights. They don't know how any of this stuff works. They don't even know where to start. So many times I call them, not trying to be mean, but like machine jockeys. They'll go around in a circle. They'll hit every single machine. They'll kind of throw some weight on, flip it around for about 20 minutes and leave. Is that better than nothing? Absolutely. Is it close to nothing? Yes. It's not going to be. But if they can get in and start making positive associations with the gym, good for them. No one, I'm not judging it. I'm glad they're there. Gym's for everybody, right? So on the first front, in terms of time, the vast majority, I would say the overwhelming majority of people probably do have time to make room for fitness. Where it kind of breaks down a little bit is we have to be a little creative sometimes. So I've heard stories of, say you need to hit a step count. That's one of your goals. We identified a step count as a passive calorie burn, whatever. You're taking meetings. We work with executives and VPs at my location of companies, and they're doing crazy long days. The stress levels are high. The burnout is real. They're back to back. They're not even scheduling a break for lunch or bathroom past the time. That's brutal. So what some of them even done is they're taking calls walking. They're going outside. They have a small treadmill under their desk. Like, there's a lot of ways. Before you throw out the excuse of time, we're all busy. And it doesn't mean you have to spend 2 hours in the gym or an hour and a half in the gym. That's very unrealistic for some folks. There could be some creative solutions to that. So if you're already writing it off in terms of time, I think you need to sit down, look at your schedule, and maybe get a little bit of flexible with that activity. Maybe it's not a perfect gym session. Maybe it's just a walk. That is a step in the right direction. That is a win. In terms of the second point that I hear of the objection of not knowing what to do, That's totally valid. Gyms can be intimidating initially, but one of my favorite parts of the job is taking these demographics. I think of Mary, my 75-year-old powerlifter. She owned those bars. She belonged there as much as you and I did. It was her. It's for everybody, but she quickly became comfortable with the equipment and felt in control of it. And it's a skill that can be learned. There's many good resources. I encourage folks, if they are new to the gym to try and find a good personal trainer. I wish I had one. I would have saved a lot of time and mistakes in my fitness journey. But there's many good resources out there. You know, there's anything can be learned on YouTube. So that excuse only really holds up for so long, right?
Yeah,
so you need to quit Google search.
You know, what was interesting is, and I think a lot of people, both of those things you mentioned are common. And those go back 100 years, probably as long as
sure.
gyms. And, you know, there's workouts. I think you can be as efficient. I think I was catching a video the other day where a guy was doing, I think he did 5 sets and he was working his arms and he says, this is 10 minutes and it fried his arms. And I know you don't have to do a 10 minute workout, but
miserable, miserable workout.
Yeah. My point is that
you could.
If you have a desire, there is enough time. And so I always remember, you know, way back in the day, Jack Lane would even say, you know, he says, hey, you've got 15 minutes, you got 20 minutes,
yep.
you know, to do something. So I know that that's a thing that people, but then again, they have to look at it and say, there's got to be a priority. I've got to make a commitment that I'm going to give this amount of time, yep. this many sure. days a week towards my health.
Yep.
And the other thing I think is kind of interesting in your mom, and there's a lot of ladies, I think, who have that gym phobia of you go in there and your mom, she doesn't work out in the same gym that I do because she says, oh, you go into the heavier weight room and there's these guys in there and they're big and heavy. And
it's intimidating. It can
yep,
be intimidating.
Yep. And so yep. she goes to, you know, another place. And there are places that are not very expensive. She goes to, I'm not trying to plug them, but a commercial gym called Planet.
The purple one.
The purple Planet Fitness pays $10 or $15 a month to work out, you know.
The business model works, yeah.
You know, and if there's weights in there and there's machines in there, and so there is an opportunity to do that. I guess one of the things as we get close to this hour going, Wes, is what has been the best part and maybe the hardest part of being a fitness trainer and working in this field? What has been in your mind, the most rewarding thing? And then what has been the most challenging?
Yeah, no, the first one, the rewarding, immediately comes to mind because I had a clear picture commuting into San Francisco at the crack of dawn to sell a product that I think was questionably valued, cold calling the people I didn't even know that would properly benefit from it. And man, that there's a lot of money to be made in tech. Some people make great careers selling, especially if you get a good product. I could not do it. I could not push something that it wasn't helping people. I believe so strongly in what fitness has done for my life and for the clients and for millions of people every year that it's such an easy sell, so to speak. I don't do hard selling at my job. I don't sell packages. If people want to come back and I sell my value, which not to brag, I typically do. I do have a really good retention rate. It speaks for itself. And we don't have to corner people. I'm not harassing anybody. And so the best part of the job, getting to the question, is when that client comes in, that grandmother, that middle-aged woman, that person that's never been to the gym, they're like, oh, my pants are fitting differently. Or, this doesn't hurt anymore. This thing, this nagging pain that I've had for 5-10 years, it doesn't hurt anymore. It's hard to quantify. And I think I'm so lucky to be in this position, jobs that have that kind of immediate impact on people's lives. Even physical therapists, who are wonderfully talented and educated, insurance usually only pays for a handful of sessions. And guess what? Most of the time, they don't see that end result. So my heart goes out to them where they have the knowledge. They know what to tell people. The system doesn't allow them to finish it out. I'm actually at the tail end where I hopefully get to see the actual recovery process. So I get the payout from that, right?
Well, they're doing the triage. You're getting to take them.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it varies. Of course, there's good physical therapists and probably less. They give them a printout and send them on their way. Good luck. Go do this at home. There's no coaching. There's not a whole lot there. So that has been so meaningful and rewarding for me. And it comes back to my own journey. As I remember, for those folks that are thinking about aesthetics or happiness of themselves, I still remember exactly what that feels like, looking in the mirror and seeing that. I never want anyone to feel that way. So, it gets still, you can see how fresh that is. So being able to help that kid, that 19-year-old kid, is very rewarding.
So you mean, Wes, when the feeling of, and this goes to the root of being enough and feeling that value, is when people look in the mirror and they don't like what they see. They don't, for whatever reason, whether it's mental, it could be emotional, physical, spiritual in this way. And one of the things that I keep wanting people, and this is just me and the path that I take in my life, we are enough. I believe God created us as potentially amazing, talented, loving, compassionate people, and we have all this freedom to choose a life. And one of the things that I've been preaching about for so long, and I work hard to try to do this for myself, and you and I have talked about this, is finding this life balance of honoring what it is to be physically healthy in this body and mentally healthy and being appreciative of life and emotionally happy and connected to people and friends and, you know, having the people around you that support you and love you and such. And I know for me, it's been an ongoing, not just battle, but the process of dealing. Before there was social media, you know, you'd had the jokes of going to the beach and having the big bully kick sand in your face, and you'd be the skinny guy and stuff. And
classic.
It's a classic thing. And while I never was a bodybuilder, I got to experience getting stronger than many people. And there was a period when I worked at Gold's Gyms, and when that was the mecca of bodybuilding, and got to meet with and talk with and work out with some guys that were going on stage and were, you know, some of the biggest bodybuilders in the world at the time. And I could always feel when you're in there and you're looking to compare and contrast, it doesn't matter how big you are, how strong you are. For me, there was always somebody way.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you're never going to win that game.
No. Yeah, and I remember going, I could get, and where it gets scary is when we get caught up into that compare and contrast. I remember doing a personal record of my bench, getting a little over 400 pounds. And it was, and this was, I was 23 years old and big and heavier guy. And it was such a huge thing for me. And I remember the very next day, a big bodybuilder came in there and he heard I'd done that. And I was the general manager, and he put that on there and did it 15 times before even warmed up. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, this was a lifetime thing for me. And it was not even his warm up. And so my point in saying this is this life balance thing, and for people to know that the victory is in the day-to-day movement, honoring the body, making it stronger, making the muscles stronger, making the bones denser, maybe relieving some pain, knowing that you are honoring this life that you have to be able to be kind to other people, to do good business, to love your family, love your friends, and to celebrate this gift that is life.
Yeah, and that's one of the best reasons, I think, of fitness, is it to let you live better, to love harder, to do the things you want to do, and to have more fun. If you like lifting for the sake of lifting or working out for the sake of working out, that's great. But man, it empowers you to do everything better in your life. It's impossible to quantify that.
No, I'm glad that, you know, I'm glad you got that, because I think, you know, as a father, you always want your kids to be healthy. Need to get your sister, they're working out. Wes has put both my wife and his mom and his sister on a program, and you want them to become as motivated as you are, and they're doing really well with that. And so I think it does help when you have support of the people around you, your fitness journey. So if you can get a friend, a husband, a wife, somebody to go with you or at least support you, encourage you, that's a huge thing in that way.
Sure. I want to speak to that if we have the time for that, because I do work with clients that are kind of encouraged, I'm getting quotation marks, shamed, pressured, also words. And that doesn't work. And it can come from a place of love, but true change, guys, has to come from within. There has to be a spark. If I sit down with a client and I spoke with one this week, kids bought it for their elderly father. They want some sessions for him because they want to keep him healthy. He doesn't see it the same way. I cannot create a spark when there isn't any. There has to be something from the individual. And one of the hardest things we can do is have captured that light for us, and we see the path and we want people to help. And this can be a lot of things besides fitness. We get very into something. Unless there's a spark, you can't force people to walk the path. And I really want to reiterate that. People can't be shamed, pressured into long-term change. There has to be a reason from within. So I do encourage those. The best way you can help others to get into fitness and to make those changes, especially after you have seen it, is by being the role model, a non-pressuring, loving, supportive partner, family member, friend, whatever, but live that life and they will see the benefit of it. You won't even have to say anything. If they're ready to make that change, they will. They will. So I really encourage just be the example.
Well, what there's so much wisdom in that statement, and I don't want people to miss it, because it goes for everything. It goes for, to be the physical model that supports people, to be that living example, be kind, compassionate, be a living example. And that's the same thing for keeping your mind sharp. It's a wonderful example of being a kinder, more compassionate, loving person. It also fits for me being a faith-based person to, as much as I want the whole world to come to know God, I know that you can't force somebody. All you can do is be the best person you can be. You said it perfectly that way. And hopefully, in my view of the world, and it's always, it sparks them in always to physically be a better person, to mentally be a better person, emotionally be a better person, spiritually be a better person. And I do think that in all of those main areas, and these are huge areas we talk about at the Call of the Soul, focus on the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual as part of living that balanced life. So, Wes, I want us to be able to come back, because I want to talk about so many more things about physical and other different areas and stuff, but we're actually coming up on our time already. It goes so fast. So I guess one of the questions I would ask you is, if you had to give a piece of advice for someone who maybe used to be physical when they were younger, but because of life and family and maybe careers, that they've gotten out of touch with the physicality of their body, and maybe they're experiencing limitations with their movements or health or shortness of breath or flexibility, what would you offer them or tell them to help them get started, somehow sparking that gets them moving in a direction that may help them physically going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. That's another wonderful question. Start collecting small wins. Don't, if we think of weight loss, it's a simple concept, but I mean, and you think about food, and then there's a million other branches we can take from that point, and exercise, a million possible paths for that. So instead, start collecting those small wins. What's a small thing you can do maybe once a week? Maybe it's, I got a client having a couple eggs in the morning for some protein for breakfast. And that's her big thing. And guess what? We add that on. That's now a base level, right? And we do that for 2 weeks. And then maybe we add another thing. Small 1% changes over a long period of time end up being a huge change relatively quickly. And it's something that you can sustain. So I would first encourage people to to start collecting those small wins. Don't try and bite off a ridiculous amount. Be patient with yourself. It's not going to be linear progress. And then the other thing is if you choose to engage with a fitness professional, which could be great. And in this avatar that you gave me, it was someone that's a little bit older. They've maybe were active before. They're looking to get back into it. Speak to some people in the space that you trust. It can be hard to tell now, especially with social media and fitness influencers, what's a good source of information. The only advice I can give you in that short little blip here is if anyone tells you that this is the path, this is the one way to lose weight, this is the one way to get big, this is the one way, if they don't answer that question with you ask, hey, how do I do this? With it depends, I would give it a huge red flag. If anyone's so trying to sell you on only one particular path, I would give that fitness professional
the magic bullet.
There is no magic bullets. There is no magic. And I wish there was. I wish there was. We like Ozempic. We're in the age of Ozempic. There are no magic bullets. You know, that can help, but it always depends on you. So if anyone tells you this is what you got to do, no room for wiggle, I would give that person a total pass. Just keep looking.
Wow. And, you know, in our day and age of marketing, you see that all the time in that way. So I think that's a wonderful piece of advice, Wes, is you know, helping people to at least get them stimulated in that way. And there's a million ways to get up the mountain, gang. And so, you know, I so appreciate you taking the time to begin to share with our audience a little bit more about physical fitness. Wes, if they had a question or if they wanted to learn a little bit more, I know you're out here with me on the West Coast, you know, in the San Francisco Bay Area, but if they had a question or they wanted to get in contact with you some way, is there some way that they could reach out and ask a question or find out a little bit more about specifically what you do and how you do it? How might they reach you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I train privately in person from a certain location, so I'm not taking any in-person clientele. But if you want to get a hold of me, I'm happy to answer any fitness-related questions. That's probably the easiest way on Instagram. You can find me at WFAULK, WFALK _PT. That's my Instagram handle. And feel free to I have some content on there. It's not up to date, but feel free to take a look and shoot me any messages. And I'm more than happy to help with really any fitness-related questions or nutrition.
That's awesome. So, again, for people who have questions, you know, I don't want to shamelessly plug my son, but I would because I know he is an amazing person. I know he's not because he's my son. I've talked to so many people that have worked with him in different ways. And so, yeah, is it a proud papa? Yeah, absolutely. But he knows, I mean, I know a little bit about fitness and he knows 10 times more than I do. So, if you have any questions, he's a kind, compassionate soul. So if you want to grab a little bit of information, reach out to him and hit him up with that. So Wes, thank you so much for being on the show. And I look forward to having another conversation about fitness, health, maybe talking about your new parenting adventure that you're
in. Oh, man. All kinds of things. anytime. Thanks for having me on, Deb.
No worries. So, again, as a in our little shameless plug for what we do on the show here, there's a little gift. I would strongly recommend you, if you have a question, hit up Wes. But if you want to find a little bit of information that we have, I wrote a very short little book a couple of years ago. You can go on the website, and it's a free gift. If you figure out how to do this, if you go on to the callofthesoul.org website, and if you look on the store, go down and click on Dying Young as Late as Possible, and that is a book that I wrote some years ago with this kind of philosophy that my son and I were talking about in mind, meaning let's die as late as possible, meaning living as long as we can, but living a young life. And this is kind of a little foundation, little ebook. And if you go to anywhere in Work with Ray, and whether it says coaching or training or speaking, just put in your name and how you heard about us. Just write in that comment section, hey, can you send me the Dying Young as Late as Possible book? I'll get it and I'll send that to you. It'll come as a PDF. And that would be another little way of you to maybe begin to thinking about being more physical. But again, I also encourage you to start taking some steps. And if you have some questions, hit up Wes. He will get back to you and share with you whatever information he can that will help you on your journey. So everybody, thank you for taking the time to chat. Again, thanking my son for being on this call. It's always great to visit with him. And until next time, everybody, have a wonderful rest of your week. And we look forward to talking with you again soon. Take care, everybody.